Morning. Today's daf and Shabbos Kuf Mem Hey. We're in Kuf Mem Dalet Amud Beis. We are starting about 6-7 lines from the bottom of the Amud with the words Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. A topic of discussion over the course of this morning and this daf is going to be Schita, at least for the first half of the daf. When we get to the second half of the daf, we're going to be getting a new Mishnah and we're going to be moving on to a different topic in Bishol Achar Bishol. That'll be on the Amud Beis. In the meanwhile, however, continuing our discussion regarding Schita. So we started the topic of Schita on Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Beis with the Mishnah. Mishnah brings a machlokus between the Tanakam and the Chachamim, not about the act of squeezing. The act of squeezing a fruit is going to be a Malacha D'Oraisa, especially if we are talking about olives and grapes. Olives and grapes where, generally speaking, the standard practice of producing these are to squeeze them and to take the olives and produce olive oil, and to take the grapes and to produce wine. And so therefore, the act of squeezing itself is going to be an Issa D'Oraisa. That is what is described as a Tolados Mefarek, and it is the Av Malacha of Dash, as we already discussed extensively. So that for sure is going to be an Issa D'Oraisa, and there's nothing to discuss on that. On the other hand, when the juice comes out on its own, meaning to say that it was very plump, it was very ripe, and there is juice coming out on its own, so is one allowed to enjoy the juice that came out on its own? And so the answer was no, because of Gzeira D'Rabbanan. Once you enjoy the juice that comes out on its own, so then you're going to be tempted to go ahead and to squeeze it, which would be an Issa D'Oraisa. The discussion that we had over the past couple of days is basically we took these fruit and we put them into three categories. Category number one was Esim V'Anavim, which we just got done describing. Category number two was Tusim V'Rimonim, berries and pomegranates, where sometimes they were squeezed for its juice, but sometimes it was eaten as a fruit. And so when you have this middle category over here, what would be the halacha if the juice comes out from these Tusim V'Rimonim on their own? So we saw machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda, and as the Amoraim point out, specifically Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, this category, that is the place where Rav Yehuda and the Tanakama have their debate regarding the juice that comes out on its own. And then we have the third category, which is Shar Peros, other fruits. All other fruits which are typically eaten and not juiced. So when it comes to these other fruits, so the juice that comes out on its own is going to be mutter. Furthermore, as we learned in yesterday's daf, you're even allowed to squeeze them lechatchila on Shabbos, meaning since they are fruit that typically are eaten and are not juiced, so they're not even candidates for the malach of schita, and so therefore you're allowed to squeeze them directly on Shabbos. This was the Gemara's conclusion. The halacha basically looks at schita in this regard. A major important topic which we didn't discuss, and nor are we going to plan it to discuss, and that is can the modern usages of fruit move it in its category, meaning oranges. Oranges, especially here in Florida, oranges are typically used for juicing, are typically grown for juicing. So do oranges move into this category number one? Does it remain in category number two? Lemons, which is typically back in the day viewed as sharp peros, is category number three. So our usage of lemons basically is that sometimes we eat them, but often there's a time we juice them. So do they move into category number two, et cetera, et cetera? So there is a major discussion to be had regarding whether or not fruits are going to be moving from one category to another based on its usages. Okay, that is a major part of the Schita discussion. We now get to continue. We are on Kuf Mem Dalet Amud Beis, and now we're going to be discussing a halacha regarding Schita on Shabbos. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So chait Adam eshkol shel anavim lesocha kedera, aval lo lesocha ka'ara. A person is allowed to squeeze grapes onto a plate of food, but not into a bowl. Now, the difference between kedera and ka'ara, we're going to speak about it in just a moment. But first, let's tackle the issue that you're allowed to squeeze the grapes onto a plate of food. Why should that be okay? Look at Rashi, lesocha kedera. Rashi writes, shel taf shel itakno demucha milsa delav lamashka ba'ile. Meaning, yes, it's true that you are extracting the juice of the grapes, but you don't want the mashke, meaning you don't want it as a juice per se, ela le'ochel. Rather, what you really want to do is you want to put it into another food. V'ein ze derech prikaso, this is not the standard manner in which porek is done, meaning this is not mefarek. V'havei kemafrid ochel me'ochel. What you're doing is really just extracting a food from a food. Meaning the definition, says Rashi, of the malacha, of this tolada of mefarek, is when you're extracting mashke from an ochel. when you're extracting the liquid from a food. But if all you're doing is just simply moving food for one food to another food, which is when you're squeezing the grape and the juice is going now onto another food, this is ochel me ochel, and as a result of that, it does not define itself as the malacha, as the tolada of mefarik, and so therefore it's going to be mutar on Shabbos. Good. So that is why one is allowed to squeeze the grapes directly onto food. Now, what's the difference between a kedera and a ka'ara? So let's take a look at the next Rashi. Avala l'socha ka'ara. Rashi writes, the zimnin de la mashke kai, the alpha gab de bika'ara, lo shasi inish, lo milchamusa bi'ika iser. So Rashi says, because sometimes what happens when you're going into ka'ara is that you're squeezing it into an empty plate. Now, even though typically Rashi says, you're not going to end up drinking it, meaning what you're going to do is you're going to introduce it into another food, but nevertheless, when you're squeezing it into a ka'ara, often is a time it's an empty plate, and now when you're squeezing it, it now has the status of being a mashke, and so even though later you're going to introduce it to a food, but this does not give an allowance to go ahead and to squeeze it directly into an empty bowl, because at that point in time, it has the status of being a mashke. So the difference, says Rashi, between a kedera and a ka'ara is kedera, there's presently food in the kedera. So when I'm squeezing the grape into a kedera, that's ochel le'ochel, as opposed to a ka'ara where there are times where it's empty, and now I'm squeezing into an empty bowl. Rashi says that's the difference between the kedera and the ka'ara. We go back to the Gemara, and we're continuing. Amar Rav Chista midivrei Rabbeinu Nilmad. So from the words of Rabbeinu, a reference to Shmuel, and Rav Yehuda. So we learn the following. So one is allowed to milk a goat and have the milk go directly into the food, but not into an empty bowl. And that means to say that when you have the mashke, when you have the liquid that's going directly into the food, the status of that mashke is called ochel. And now that it's called ochel, so this is not going to be the malach of mefarik, as we already got done explaining via Rashi. So interesting now, the Gemara says that one is allowed to milk a goat directly into the food. And I understand a little bit. There are pasteurizing issues and so forth and so on. But the idea of the Gemara is that, generally speaking, to me, milking the goat would be the malacha of mefarik, would be the malacha of dash. But nevertheless, if I'm going from food to food, meaning if I'm doing it directly onto a food, that's ochel ochel. And as a result of that, it does not violate. Interesting, Tosus over here. Tosus writes, the bottom Tosus on our Amud, Nira le Rabbi Natam dehayinu dafka biyamtov. This allowance to go ahead and to milk a goat and having the milk go directly into food is specific to Yomtov, not to Shabbos. Now, why would Rabbi Natam make a distinction over here between Shabbos and Yomtov? He explains. The chazi behem lachila, habikamo uchla di ifras. So because on Yomtov, the goat you're allowed to eat. Obviously, you have to shecht it. But in other words, the goat is something which can be viewed as on Yomtov, as an ochel. And so when the milk is now being squeezed out of the goat, that is uchla de ifras. What I'm doing is I'm just separating one food from another food, the milk from the goat. Aval b'Shabbos lo chazel l'shchita. But on Shabbos, however, you can't shech the goat. Obviously, Shabbos, there's no allowance to shech the goat. There's no ochel nefesh allowance on Shabbos. And so therefore, it is now on Shabbos, this is going to mimic the malacha of dash. Rashi writes, so now it is in fact the malach of dash. Because now the animal is viewed as something which you're not allowed to eat on Shabbos. And when I'm milking, that is a separation of food from non-food. And Rabbi Natan quotes other sources as well, that this allowance to go ahead and to milk the goat, having the milk go directly into food, is specific to Yom Tov, not on Shabbos. Parenthetically, later, Tosfos is going to repeat his point again. But an interesting distinction to be made by Rabbi Natan. So, back to our Gemara. So, Mesiv Rami Bar Chama, we are now three lines from the bottom of the Amud. Zav Shechole Vesa'ez HaChalav Tameh. You have a Zav, who's an Avatuma, who milks a goat. So, the milk that comes out, the resulting milk that comes out, is going to be Tameh. So the Gemara says, now let's think this through. How does that work? So the Gemara says, well, if we're assuming now that the milk is going directly into another food, and if we assume the halacha is that ochel, that mashka that goes into an ochel has the status of being ochel, be my is kasher. So the Gemara says, so we are now on a technical problem. But when it comes to tumah, technical problem is what's called a problem. And that is that if this mashka now has the status of being an ochel, So now we know that in order for an ochel to become subject to becoming tameh, it has to first have hechsher. It has to be mukhsher lekabel tumah. It needs the preparatory stage where it comes into contact with a liquid. I know it sounds like a strange discussion that we're having, meaning we're asking the question, how can milk that comes out of a goat, how could it be mukhsher lekabel tumah? But based on the halachic principle which we were just introduced to, the question makes a lot of sense. Because once the liquid goes is going directly into food, the status of the milk now is no longer considered a mashke, it's now considered ochel. And we know that the only thing which serves as a hechsher is only going to be a liquid, not a solid, only a mashke, not an ochel. So how did this resulting milk that comes out of the goat, if it's going to be squeezed directly onto food, how is it mukhsher lekabel tumah? And meanwhile, the Braisa teaches us, it's actually a Mishnah, a Mishnah teaches us that when the Zav milks the goat, so the milk is going to be tamei. So, the Gemara says, okay, but we do have an answer. And that is that before we milk the goat, we're going to prime it a little bit. Priming the milking is going to have a little bit of drops of milk, al pi hadad. And so now, as you are expressing the rest of the milk, it's going to be first touching the primed milk that was already on the tip of the dad, and it's going to come out. And so therefore, every milk that comes out is making contact with this mashke. So even though the milk that comes out has the status of being ochel, but because it comes into contact with this prime milk, so that is the heksher, and now that it's ready to become tummy. Meis of Ravina, the Gemara, now is going to ask another question. Tamei meishe, sacha zeisim va'anavim, kebetzim mechuvenes tahor. That if I have somebody who's a tamei meis, it's an avatumah. You come into contact with a meis, so that means to say that he himself is an avatumah. And he goes ahead and he squeezes zeisim va'anavim. He's squeezing either grapes or olives. And it happens to be that the grapes or olives, the volume is exactly a beitza. We know that when it comes to food, in order for a food to become tamei, so, well, actually, it's machlokas for showing him whether it's not, it's to become tamei or to transfer the tumah to something else. But regardless, in order for a food, I'm going to say it right now, nice and simple. In order for a food to become tamei, so it has to be the shear of a beitza. And what happened over here is that he went ahead and he squeezed the fruit. So now the fruit is going to be tahor. Now, why should that be? Rashi writes over here. Rashi, top of the Amud. Now we're describing over here that the only thing that he's making contact with is the fruit and not the liquid that comes out. So now, consider, says Rashi, that when he's squeezing it, so because it is exactly the volume of a beitza, so the moment that he squeezes it, that first drop that comes out, so the food itself now is going to be less than the shear of a beitza. Ve'ina ochel afa pishu tamei mitamei hamashke, she'in ochel mitamei acherim bepochos mechabeitza. Okay, it happens to be, I go back to that point that I made incidentally a moment ago, Rashi l'shitas, or Rashi throughout Shas was of the opinion that a fruit can become, any food can become tamei, even though it's less than a kebetza. It's not, it's simply not going to transfer the tumah unless it is the size of a beitza. So Rashi says that the significance of tumas ochlin vis-a-vis the volume of a beitza is for it to transfer to others. Okay, it doesn't change the basic point over here, and that is that the even though the food itself is going to become tamei, it can't transfer it over to the mashka. Why? Because the moment that I squeeze it, I now done two things simultaneously. Have a drop come out, and the total volume now being less than a beitza. And so therefore it no longer has the ability to impart its tumah to the drop. So bepachus micha beitza, aval im haya noge bemashke, it melei bashke mitipa rishona, shamashke mekabel tumah b'chol shehu. Now if it touched the drop itself, so then the drop itself is going to become tamei. This halach of ochel needing a requirement of a shir v'kabeitza, that's only for ochel, not for a mashka. Okay, but anyway, so the reason why the liquid that is squeezing out of this grape is not going to become tamei is because you're only touching the grape, and the moment you squeeze it out, it has less than the volume of a beitza, and so therefore it simply does not have the ability to transmit the tumah from the food to the mashka that's coming out. Now, all this being stated, the Gemara now sets ourselves up for the question, which is, as we are now on the top of Kuf Mem Hei Amad Aleph, top line, Hayoser Mikabetza Tamei. The obvious inference would be is that if the fruit that's being squeezed is greater than that of a kabeitza, so it's going to be tamei. So now the question is pretty predictable, which is that if we're assuming, like we've been doing since the beginning of this year, that any liquid that is going to go into another food has the status of being a food, so then this mashka has the status of being an ochel. If it has the status of being an ochel, it didn't have the necessary hechsher. It wasn't primed to becoming tamei. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara gives an answer, which is a pretty straightforward answer, and that is that the assumption is that you squeezed it into food. No, we're not talking about a case where you squeezed it into food. Rather, you squeezed it into an empty bowl, and so therefore it has the status of being a mashke. I'm Rav Yirmiyah Ketanai. So now, what the Gemara is just been doing since the beginning of our shir is presenting this idea that when I'm squeezing a liquid directly onto another food, that is mashke habala ochel, and the halachic status of that mashke is that it is ochel. And now, how does it manifest in a couple of ways? Number one, vis-a-vis the malach of schita, so this does not violate the malach of schita. Schita is when I am extracting a mashke from an ochel. But all I'm doing is just simply separating ochel mi ochel, so that's not the malacha of schita. Therefore, one is allowed to squeeze any fruit directly into another food. Also, in terms of tuma tahara, if I'm going to now be squeezing a juice directly onto another food, so therefore the juice that comes out now has the status of being ochel, and it was eno mukhshir lekabel tuma, unless you go with the answers that the Gemara gave. Unless it came into contact with another liquid, that was the chalav al pi hadad, or I'm squeezing it directly onto into an empty bowl, where there it does not have the status of being an ochel, but if it's being squeezed onto food, it has the status of being ochel, and therefore did not experience hechsher. Okay, so this is what we've been discussing. The Gemara now would like to suggest this issue of whether or not one squeezes an ochel, a mashke, out of an ochel, but it's going into another food, and therefore has the status of being an ochel, so the Gemara now is going to suggest that this is a machlokas tanaim. Kitanai. Hamachlik banavim lo hukshur. Rabbi Yehuda amar hukshur. So the Gemara over here brings down a Mishnah in Maitros. And that is the following. A person is now going to be putting a grape paste over the bread. Much like what we do with our bread in terms of the eggs, where we take eggs and we brush them over the bread before we bake them. So back then, so they would brush the bread with grape juice. And the Mishnah brings down to machlokas whether or not the bread now is mukhshir lekabel tuma with this baste. According to the Tanakhama, lo hukshir, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, hukshir. And so the Gemara now is going to suggest my love behakimiflugi. Now machlokas over here would be masavar mashka bala ochel ochelhu umar savar lav ochelhu. So one way to explain the machlokas over here is very simply what we have been discussing, and that is that according to the Tanakhama, who says that that even though it is a juice based that is now being spread over the bread, but because it's going directly onto bread, so that even though the juice has the status of being a mashka, but because it's going directly onto the bread, it doesn't have the status of being a mashka, but rather has the status of being an ochel, and therefore no hechsher has occurred. On the other hand, Rav Yehuda, who says that the bread now is mukhshir lekabel tuma, that's because the juice has the status of being a mashke, even though it's going directly onto bread. So the Gemara is now suggesting that this is, in fact, the machlokas tanaim. Hopefully, what you're wondering right now is, why are we having a discussion as to whether or not bread is mukhshir lekabel tuma through this grape juice based that I put on top of it? What are we even talking about? How did you make the bread? So you made the bread by taking flour and mixing it with water. So already, isn't that the hechsher that the bread requires? So hopefully you're asking that question. So if you take a look at the side, on a note, on a marginal note to Rashi, so I don't know who's responsible for this, but he writes that we have to be talking about where the bread itself was kneaded with mei peros. It was kneaded with fruit juice. And fruit juice meaning something other than olive oil or grape juice. So as we discussed yesterday, there are only seven liquids that are going to be machshir, that are only going to prepare something to becoming tamei, making something susceptible to tumo. And the only things that are coming out of a fruit that are going to do that is only grape juice and olive oil. All of the fruit are not a hechsher. So over here, so again, I don't know who to credit, but he writes over here that the bread under discussion over here was prepared with any other juice, an apple juice, an orange juice, whatever. And so therefore, the bread itself is not mukshar because it was not baked, it was not kneaded with water, and it was not, and nor was it used with grape juice or olive oil. And so therefore, now this bread at this point in time is not mukshar l'kabel tumah. But now that I put this grape juice based on top of it, so ostensibly it is mukshar l'kabel tumah. And again, the debate over here is that because I'm putting it directly on the bread, on the dough, so this is now mashka habala ochel. And what the Gemara is suggesting is that that's the machlokus over here, whether it's considered like ochel or whether it's not considered like ochel. The Gemara is going to direct us to two other ways to explain this machlokus in the Mishnah. And so the Gemara is going to suggest this is not the only way that we can understand the machlokus. There are other ways we could do so. Rapapa says no. Maybe we could assume over here that both these Tanaim are of the opinion that a liquid that goes onto a food does not have the status of food, but rather has the status of being a liquid. It happens to be that we know that when I'm basting this dough and I'm putting it in the oven, so most of the base is going to get destroyed by the oven, by the heat of the oven. And so this falls under the category of hamashka habali ibud. I am putting a liquid on it, but at the same time, I know that this liquid is going to be destroyed. Marsavar mashkahu, marsavar lav mashkahu. And the debate over here amongst the Tanaim is, what is the status of a mashka which we know is destined to be destroyed? Does that have the status of a mashka or not? The Gemara says that could be the machlokas. Uvepluktu dahani Tanai d'tanya. And the Gemara says, and this is a precedented way to explain the machlokas. The Gemara says, consider, if a person bruises olives with hands that are tamei, so now it is mukshul kapal tumah, it is now getting the preparatory stages, so that it can become susceptible to tumah. If, however, we are just simply bruising them so that we could salt, so it is not mukshur. Leida im igia zesim lamasok im lav lo hukshur. And Rav Yehuda amar hukshur. And let's say that the only reason why we're bruising an olive is only to know whether or not it's ready to be put into the press. And so that means to say that basically what we did is we picked off an olive off the tree, and we just simply want to know, is it ripe or is it not ripe? So what you're doing now is you're just basically squeezing it, but only to know whether or not it's ripe. And so while we're testing it, so the resulting juice that comes out, it's going to fall to the floor. It's holech le'ibud. Is that juice that's being expressed from the olive, is that going to be machshir or is it not going to be machshir? And this is now a machlokus in this braisa. Machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. Tanakhama says lohukshir, Rabbi Yehuda says hukshir. So my love hakamithlagi, the marsavar mashka omer le'ibud mashkahu, o marsavar lav mashkahu. So the easiest way to explain the machlokas over there in that braisa is exactly the way we are trying, the Rav Papa is trying to explain our machlokas over here. And that when the liquid is going to be lost, meaning it's going to be, we know it's going to be wasted, we know we're not going to use it, so and is that going to be viewed as a mashka or not going to be viewed as a mashka? So that is the machlokas over there, as Rav Papa is explaining it over here. So this is the second way that we're explaining the machlokas, and now the Gemara is going to provide for us a third way to understand the machlokas. So I'm Rav Huna Barit, Rav Yeshua, Hani Tanai B'mashka Omed Le'ibu Pligi. So as far as the braisa you just got done quoting, Hamefatseya, so as far as the end of that braisa is concerned, you're right. The machlokas over there is Holech Le'ibud, whether that's a mashka or whether that's not a mashka. However, over here, Rav Huna Barit, Rav Yeshua says there's another way to explain the machlokas. V'hanech Tanai B'mashka Omed Le'tzachzachol Kamifligi. Over here, we're just simply talking about brushing the grape juice on top of the dough. And all we're doing is we're just trying to be mitzachzech. We're just trying to create a shine for the dough. But it's not a liquid in the sense that we're not looking to drink it. So when all we're doing is just trying to create a shine for another food, does that have the status of being a mashka? So Rav Huna Barit, Rav Yeshua says, that's the machlokas in the Mishnah Maestros. And so when all is said and done, we are now three different explanations given in the Gemara in terms of how to understand the Mishnah Maestros. The Mishnah Maestros talks about putting a brushing of the grape juice on top of the dough, and a machlokus in that Mishnah whether or not the dough now is mukshul kabel tumah, and we'll also add that the dough under discussion over here was not kneaded with water, because obviously then it would already be mukhshar. It was kneaded with a orange juice, apple juice, whatever. And now the question becomes that when I brush the grape juice on top of it, is it now mukhshar? It's a machlokas tanaim. How to understand the machlokas tanaim? So either it's going to be predicated on the question of mashka habala ochel, whether it's a ka'ochel or not ka'ochel, or two, mashka, which is holech li'ibud, whether that has the status of being a mashka, or three, mashka ha'omi l'tzachzichol, where the mashka is just there to provide a shine, is that going to have a status of being a mashka? The Gemara says those are three different ways to explain the machlokas in the Mishnah Maitzros. Okay? And we are continuing. Amar Rebbe Zera, Amar Rebbe Chia, Barashi, Amar Rav Sochid, Adam Eshkol, Shalanavim, L'socha Kedera, Avalo L'socha Ka'ara. Okay, so the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rav, what we already started off our daf, and that is that you could take a grape and squeeze it directly into food, but not into an empty bowl. Good. V'dag L'tziro, Afi L'socha Ka'ara. Now, let's say I'm taking the fish and I'm squeezing the brine out of the fish, so that you can do afilu l'socha kara, even into an empty bowl. Rashi writes over here, v'dag l'tziro, schitas dag l'hotzi tziro, lav mashkehu, ela ochlin. So here, the way we're viewing the brine that's coming off of the fish, we're viewing that as an ochel, even if it's going into an empty bowl. This obviously represents a kula. Yasa Rav Dimi v'karmel lala hashmaita. So Rav Dimi now is saying, over the sugya amalei, abayla Rav Dimi, asa mishmei derav masisun, v'lo kashalichu. You learn that in the name of Rav. Therefore, you have no inconsistencies. But however, we have a problem. Because Anan Mishmei de Shmuel Masisan La, but we learned it in the name of Shmuel. Vikashilan, and it bothered us. Mi Amar Shmuel, Daglasira, Afilo Socha Ka'ara, Vaitmar. The Gemara says, however, I'm going to compare with another halacha, and we're going to learn together now what is a person allowed to squeeze pickled vegetables or cooked vegetables. And we're going to see now an inconsistency between Shmuel and Shmuel. And that is the following. Kvashim shesachtam. Let's say we have pickled vegetables. And you squeeze the pickled vegetables. Amar Rav Lagufa mutal amemeh and potter. Aval aser. Vishlakos bein lagufan. Bein lemeh and mutter. So Rav says that in terms of pickled vegetables, if I'm squeezing out the pickled vegetables, ligufan. And that means that right now, I think that the pickled vegetable is too saturated with the juice. And I just simply want to squeeze it out, because I want less juice in the pickle itself. So that would be mutter. If, however, I'm squeezing out the pickle because I actually want the extract, I want the juice, so that is going to be rabbinically prohibited to do on Shabbos. When it comes to cooked vegetables, says Rav, so ben legufan, ben lememe, and mutter. So there you're allowed to squeeze out the juice from the cooked vegetable, and it doesn't matter what your intention is. If you want less liquid in the vegetable, that's fine. If I actually want the liquid itself, that's also fine. That is Shitas Rav. Shmuel Amar, Echek Vashem, Echek Shlakos, Ligufan Mutter, Lemeimeim Pater, Aval Aser. And according to the Shita of Shmuel, when it comes to either pickled vegetables or when it comes to cooked vegetables, the halacha is going to be the same for both. Notably, if I want the vegetable to have less juice, so and I'm doing it for the vegetable itself, Mutter. If, however, I want the extract, then it's Pater, Aval Aser, it's going to be rabbinically forbidden to do so. And so now what comes down now is that within Shita Shmuel, if I am squeezing out the either the pickle juice or the cooked juice, either way, it's going. If I'm doing so for the juice, it's going to be Pater Bar Asar. And now, and if I compare that to the halacha of Shmuel, which is that if I squeeze the brine out of the fish, so the statement was that it's mutter. Well, if that statement was made in the name of Shmuel, what we find now is an inconsistency. Now, if it happened to have been made in the name of Rav, there would be no problem whatsoever. Because Rav says that when it comes to shlokos, when it comes to cooked foods, so there you're allowed to squeeze it even if I want the liquid. And what we'll then say is that Rav is simply comparing the brine and the fish to the liquid in a cooked vegetable. And so therefore there would be no inconsistency whatsoever. If, however, I learn in the name of Shmuel, so then we have an inconsistency. Amar le Elokim eine ra'u v'lo zar. So so his response is no, right, an expression. My goodness, quoting the pasuk in Iyov, right? I saw this with clarity. It's not strange to me. Meaning, me pume de Rav Yirmiyah shami lev Rav Yirmiyah Rav Zera Rav Zera me Rav Chia bar Ashi Rav Chia bar Ashi me Rav. And he says, look, as far as the transmission is concerned, I have a clear transmission going from one amora to another amora all the way back to Rav. Meaning to say that I know it's b'shem Rav. You say it's B'Shem Shmuel, it happens to be, you're wrong. It was said over B'Shem Rav. We have no inconsistency whatsoever. Good. Continuing, the Gemara now wants to go back to this halacha about the squeezing of pickled vegetables and the squeezing of a cooked vegetable. Gufa, kvashim shesachtam. So we're going to go over the first shitas of Rav and Shmuel. We already know them, but so I'm going to read a little bit quicker. Legufan muter lememeim patar avalas v'shlakus mein legufan lememeim muter. So that shitas Rav. Shmuel amar echad zeh legufan muter lememeim patar avalas. That shita Shmuel. Good. So the Gemara reintroduced us to the opinions of Rav and Shmuel regarding the squeezing of pickled vegetables and cooked vegetables. And now the Gemara is going to introduce us to one more opinion. Rav Yochanan amar echa kvashim echa shlakos ligufam mutter. So according to Shitas Rav Yochanan, and both pickled and cooked vegetables, if I'm squeezing it for the vegetable, meaning I want the vegetable to have less liquid inside of it, and that's why I'm squeezing it, it would be mutter. But lim me mayhem. If what I'm doing is I'm squeezing because I want to get the liquid out of there, because I want the liquid, chayev chatas. According to Rav Yochanan, one would be subject to a malacha d'oraisa of mefarig. This is the act of schita. Meisvei, the Gemara is going to be challenging. Actually, all three positions based on the following braisa. Sochtin kvashim b'shabbos l'tzorcha shabbos avala l'motzei shabbos. One is allowed to squeeze a pickled vegetable on Shabbos for Shabbos, but not for after Shabbos. Now, when it comes to olives and grapes, you're not allowed to squeeze them, and if you squeeze them, one would be subject to a chiyuv chatas. Now, kasha l'Rav, kasha l'Shmuel, kasha l'Rav Yochanan, the Gemara says that at face value, a simple reading of the braisa would be difficult for all three positions. The Gemara now notes a way to explain the braisa for all three positions. Rav Mataras Latami, Shmuel Mataras Latami, Rav Yochanan Mataras Latami. Each Amara is going to be reading the Braisa based on their respective position. Rav Mataras Latami, Sochtin Kvashim B'Shabbos, Tzorcha Shabbos, Avalola Motzei Shabbos. One is allowed to squeeze a pickled vegetable on Shabbos for Shabbos, but not for Motzei Shabbos, but Medvar Mamorim Legufan. That's only talking about if you're squeezing it for the vegetable itself, but if I'm squeezing the pickled vegetable because I actually want the juice out of it, rabbinically forbidden. Shlakos. And now this is how he's reading into the braisa. Now we're changing the topic. If we're talking about a cooked vegetable, so there you're allowed to squeeze a cooked vegetable under all circumstances, whether I'm squeezing it for the vegetable or whether I'm squeezing it for the juice. For a cooked vegetable, there is no problem whatsoever, according to Rav. That's what the braisa is telling us in between the lines. And then, now when it comes to grapes and olives, you're not allowed to squeeze it, and if you do squeeze it, it would be nisa d'oraisa. That is the braisa according to Rav. And now we're going to do the same thing for both Shmuel and for Rav Yochanan. Shmuel matar sotame tzochtin kvashim b'shabbos tzorcha shabbos hu adin l'shlakos. Now, Shmuel will tell you that the braisa, when talking about pickled vegetables, actually is including in that category both pickled vegetables and cooked vegetables. And b'medvar mamon l'gufan, and the only time that you're allowed to squeeze them is if I'm doing so for the vegetable itself. Aval emeimeim patar v'laser. But if I'm squeezing it for the liquid, it would be rabbinically forbidden in both cases. V'zeisin v'anavim lo yischov v'msachat chayiv chatas. And when it comes to grapes and olives, you're not allowed to squeeze it. If you do so, one violates the yisur d'oraisa of schita. Rav Yochanan Mataras Latame, and now we get to the sheet of Rav Yochanan. How is he going to read the braisa? So Sochtin Kvashim Letzorcha Shabbos. So one is allowed to squeeze pickled vegetables for Shabbos, Avalola Motzei Shabbos, but one is not allowed to do so for after Shabbos. Echa Kvashim Ve'echa Shlakos, and this is true for both pickled and cooked vegetables. Ba'med V'armamorim Legufan, that's only for the vegetable itself. Avalim Eimehem, but if I'm squeezing for the liquid, Lo Yischot, so then you're not allowed to squeeze Ve'im Sachat. That would be analogous to squeezing an olive and a grape. The second half of the braisa is creating an equivalency. If I were to squeeze either a cooked or pickled vegetable for the liquid, it's equivalent to that of squeezing an olive and grape, which Rav Yochanan is reading the braisa, which obviously would then be an iser d'oraisa. So we have over here, in terms of the squeezing of either a pickled vegetable or cooked vegetable, three opinions amongst the Amoraim. In terms of squeezing it for the vegetable itself, Akulei Alma, everyone agrees that it would be mutter. If I'm squeezing it in order to get the liquid out of it, because I want the liquid, so according to Shita Sarav, there's a distinction to be made between pickled versus versus cook. Pickle would be an Isser Derabanan. Cook would be Mutter Lagamre. According to Shmuel, they both would be Asser Mit Derabanan. And according to Rav Yochanan, if I'm squeezing for the liquid, it would be an Isser Deraisa. So three opinions amongst the Amorayim in terms of what would be for squeezing out cooked or pickled vegetables when I want the liquid. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar of Chia Barashi Amarav. Divar Torah Eino Chayev Ela Aldrisa Zeisim Vanavim Bilvad. The only time one violates the Isser Daraisa of squeezing is only for olives and grapes. The Chain Tani Debei Rabbi Nasha Divar Torah Eino Chayev Ela Aldrisa Zeisim Vanavim Bilvad. And Tana Debei Menashe also taught the same. The Ein Eid Mipi Eid Kasher Ela Leedus Isha Bilvad. And what about hearsay testimony? Now, hearsay testimony has nothing to do with our discussion, but it happens to be that it was presented in this memra. And so the Gemara now is just going to briefly discuss the question of hearsay testimony. Hearsay testimony is, generally speaking, unacceptable. The only kind of testimony that's accepted in halacha is only an eyewitness account, when the person himself saw an action. However, there is a leniency that's provided that hearsay testimony would be allowed, and that is Eidus Isha. Specifically, when a husband of a woman goes away and he does not come back and we do not know about his whereabouts and we do not know what happened to that person. So here, if let's say somebody hears from somebody else that they saw that this person died, so under those circumstances, this is what's called Eid Mipi Eid, and in terms of allowing the woman to go ahead and to remarry, so this would be acceptable. Now, if you already learned the Masechta Yevamos, we know that this was treated and discussed extensively at the end of Masechta Yevamos. It does, if this is the first time you're hearing this, this certainly would sound a little counterintuitive. Meaning we're allowing a married woman to go ahead and to marry another man based on Eid Mipi Eid. We're talking about possibly the Isser of Eishes Ish. We're talking about Arias over here. It certainly does sound like a strange place in order to be Makel and to allow Eid Mipi Eid. You can already see the top Rashi over here, that there are a number of mechanisms that work in terms of what is actually allowing her to marry another man. It's not just the hearsay testimony. There are other halachic mechanisms involved. This is obviously a really lengthy discussion to be had, which we're not going to have right now because it's only coming incidentally in our Gemara. But if this is the first time you're hearing this, certainly you can understand that this sounds a little bit strange. Ibailahu, the Gemara now wants to know, we're going to just discuss Eid Mipi Eid for another moment. Ibailahu, Eid Mipi Eid, Eid is Bechor Mahu. Eid Mipi Eid, would that work in terms of allowing a person to eat a Bechor? Without the Beis HaMikdash, somebody gets a firstborn animal, and when I say somebody, a Kohen gets a firstborn animal, so what is he going to have to do now with this firstborn animal? The answer is very simple, sit and wait. Because without a blemish, the Kohen is not allowed to eat this animal. Without a Beis HaMikdash, he can't offer the animal. And so therefore he's going to have to wait, because the only time that he's allowed to eat the animal is only when a blemish occurs on the animal. And the blemish has to occur organically, naturally. The Kohen cannot put a blemish on the animal. Now one can imagine that there is a temptation for the Kohen to go ahead and put a blemish on the animal. Otherwise he's saddled with the responsibility, pun intended, he's saddled with the responsibility of taking care of the Bechor until it gets a blemish. And so therefore, the only way that the Chachamim would allow the animal to be to go ahead and to be eaten and shechted by this Kohen is only if there is testimony given that the mum came naturally, organically, and it was not placed on the animal. So, over here, there is an Eidus requirement. Is there an allowance of Eid Mipi Eid? So that's the Gemara's question. Eid Mipi Eid, Leidus Bechor Mahu, Rav Ami Asi, Rav Asi, Sharei. So machlokus amongst the Amoraim, Amalei Rav Ami LeRav Asi v'had Tana de Bei Menashe ein Eid Mipi Eid Kasher Ela LeEidus Isha Bavad. And so now Rav Asi Rav Ami says to Rav Asi, can I remind you what we just learned together, that in the Braisa it says that the only time that we're allowing hearsay testimony to work is only by Eidus Isha, and that's the only case. So Eima LeEidus Sheh HaIsha Shera La Bilvad. So he says, yeah, but there's another way to read the Braisa. And that is that maybe what the Braisa means is that Eid Mipi Eid would work in an area where we're also going to be allowing Eidus Isha. We're also allowing a woman to testify. Meaning in the case where the husband goes away. So under those circumstances, we do allow for the testimony of a woman. And so when a woman's testimony is okay, that's when Eid Mipi Eid is also going to be okay. Fine. Rav Yemer Achsher aid mi pi aid lebechor. Rav Yemer gave an allowance that the Kohen is allowed to eat his bechor with the blemish, even though it was not direct eyewitness testimony, but it was only hearsay testimony. So the Gemara says, Kari Allah Marimar Yemer Shari Bukhra. And Rav Yemer was then somewhat labeled, branded. He was described by Marimar as Yemer Shari Bukhra, Yemer, the one who permits the firstborn, permits the Bechor. It does not sound like a compliment. It certainly sounds like he was not happy and felt that that Rav Yemer was perhaps too lenient on this matter. Now the Gemara's conclusion is that aid mipi aid works when it comes to the testimony of the Bechor that the animal was in fact blemished and it happened on its own and it was not a manufactured blemish. Chalos Devash. One or last point of the Mishnah. This takes us all the way back to the Mishnah Kuf Mem Gimel, where we talked about if the juice comes out from the olives and grapes, so one is not allowed to benefit from it. When it comes out from other fruits, tusim v'rimonim, so they are machlokas. And then the Mishnah ends off by discussing the honeycombs, where what happens is that you started scratching the honeycombs before Shabbos, and then honey comes and starts running out even into Shabbos, and the question as to whether or not one can benefit from that honey on Shabbos. Machlokas in the Mishnah. Chalos Devash ki asa Rav Oshi min Harda asa v'aisa masnisa b'yadei. Rav Oshi comes from Harda and he brings a brisa with him, and the brisa reads as follows. Zeisim v'anavim shariska meir of Shabbos. If we have olives and grapes that were crushed before Shabbos, v'yatsa me'atzman, and the liquid comes out on its own, asurin, it would be prohibited. Rav Elazar and Rabbi Shimon matirin. And both Rav Elazar and Rabbi Shimon say that it's mutter. And so what we have over here is a brisa, which kind of looks like our Mishnah. Now, notable differences, meaning in our Mishnah, first of all, if you look back at our Mishnah, so it is only Rabbi Eliezer who argues, it's not Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon. Additionally, in the Mishnah, they're arguing in the case of the honey from the honeycomb. They're not arguing in the case of the grape. So the Gemara now wants to know, Am Rav Yosef Gabri Yosef Rasa Lashminan. Rav Yosef at first does not appreciate the significance of this brisa, because he thinks at this point in time, the only additional information that's given to us in this brisa is that instead of our Mishnah teaching us it's Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar, in the brisa it's Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Yosef says, I don't follow, what's the big deal of this brisa? So Amale Abaye Tuba Kamashmalan. Abaye says, what are you talking about? There is plenty in this brisa that we can gain. The imi masnis and have amina hasam hu demikara uchla v'sof uchla avahacha demikara uchla v'sof mashka emalav. Look in the Mishnah, so Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim were arguing about the honey. One could make the argument that the honey that comes out on Shabbos does not have the status of being a mashka, but rather has the status of being an ochel. And so therefore, the case of honey from the honeycomb is ochel mi'ochel. You could have made that argument. And it's not the same as the grape juice coming out of a grape. So, kamash malan, the chiddush is no. That the Bryce is teaching us that this issue of the honey from the honeycomb is the same issue as the grape juice being extracted from the grapes. And so that's clear in the Brisa. That's not so clear in the Mishnah. So there is what to gain from the Brisa, in addition to just giving us another Tana who happens to agree with Rabbi Eliezer. We just finished up the first half of today's daf, more than the first half. Obviously all centered around the Malacha of Shechita. We now continue. We are at the Mishnah on Kuf, Mem, Hei, Amud, Beis. And now we get to discuss the topic of Bishul Achar Bishul. Such a fundamental topic. So interesting that it comes up over here near the tail end of the Masechta. We discussed Bishul extensively in the third parak of Masechta Shabbos and parak Kira and even the fourth parak in Hadmana. And so why this Mishnah over here presents itself only deep into the Masechta in the 22nd parak. So it's certainly curiosity, and I do not have any kind of explanation. But meanwhile, we learn the Mishnah. Kol Shabbat b'chamim erev Shabbos. Anything that was cooked before Shabbos. Literally, it was put into boiling water before Shabbos. But as Rashi makes it very clear, nis bashel, it's fully cooked before Shabbos. So sharon oso b'chamim b'Shabbos. So one is allowed to put it back into hot water on Shabbos. Meaning, ein bishul acher bishul. Once it's cooked before Shabbos, so then going ahead and cooking it again on Shabbos, that's not called cooking. Meaning, ein bishul acher bishul. You do not have the ability to cook something after it's already cooked, meaning it's what's called reheating. Okay, now in terms of the halacha, so this is something where the halacha is extraordinarily extensive, and I'm just making awareness of the fact that there are a number of considerations on Shabbos in terms of reheating food. Mechzei kemavashel, you have to do it in a way it doesn't look like cooking. So there are issues. It's the principle over here is correct, obviously, ein bishal achar bishal, but in terms of actual application on Shabbos, so there are a number of other considerations. So obviously, just because we learned the Mishnah does not mean we know what to do. We don't know what the halach is. But the concept is very clear, ein bishal achar bishal. V'choshelo ba b'chamin me'erev Shabbos. Now something that was not cooked on Erev Shabbos, madichin also b'chamin b'Shabbos. So what you can do on Shabbos is you can't cook it, because that's a malacha, but what you can do is you can pour hot water over it, what we would call irikli rishon, because pouring hot water on top of it is not going to cook it, it's just simply going to warm it up a little bit. Chutz min ha-maliach ha-yashan, v'kul yisai spanit, she-hadachan hi gemar malachtan. However, there are foods which are extraordinarily sensitive. Maliach ha-yashan, some sort of salted fish, old salted fish, Kul yisai span is some other kind of fish, right? I'll say a Spanish mackerel, not because I'm right, but it's a possibility. In other words, but the idea is, however, is that these foods are so soft and so delicate that even as I'm pouring hot water on top of them, that is the act of cooking, and so therefore even iri klirishon would be prohibited with these sensitive, delicate foods, what in halacha is described as kale habishol, foods that are soft and delicate, and so therefore even a even a touch of heat would go ahead and would cook them. Okay, so we have this idea presented to us in this Mishnah of Ein Bishal Achar Bishal, the Gemara, for a moment, fun discussion that we're going to be having in the next couple of lines of Gemara regarding certain foods which were pleasurable, enjoyable to some Amoraim, and just the opposite for other Amoraim. So, Kigon Ma, Amar Safra, Kigon Tarnagaloso, de Rabbi Abba. So the Gemara just gives an example of what does that mean that you had a chicken that was fully cooked before Shabbos, soaking in hot water. So the Gemara says, like the chicken of Rabbi Abba. Okay, a particular dish that was obviously popular back in the day. And the Gemara just uses this as an example where it was heated in hot water before Shabbos. And basically it turned into a very soft mush going into Shabbos. Fine. Amar Rav Safra Zimnechada Iklais Lahasan. So Rav Safra says there was at one point in time that I went over there. And v'uchlemine, and I ate from this chicken v'ilo, Rabbi Abba de Ashkain Chamra, bar, talta, tarfe, isnase. And had it not been that I would have chased it down with good wine, right? Wine of three tarfe, literally three leaves, right? It could be three-year-old wine. It came up recently in the Gemara some time ago here in Shabbos. Anyway, had I not chased it down with wine afterwards, isnase, I would have been put in serious danger. Meaning the food really disgusted me. And the only way that I was able to survive that eating experience is only through a good wine afterwards. Rav Yochanan Raik Mikutach de Bavlai. Rav Yochanan would spit just at the mention of Kutach HaBavlai. And by the way, in this food battle of the Gemara over here, what you're also getting is the division between the Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael and the Amoraim of Bavel. Meaning, if you're looking carefully over here, you're seeing that what is liked by one community is strongly disliked by the other community, and it could play into the general divide between the Amoraim. The Gemara, on a number of occasions, speaks about the divide that occurred between these two groups. Anyway, so Rav Yochanan, when even mentioning Kutach HaBavlai, he would spit. He was disgusted by it. I'm Rav Yosef Balei Rokanan, Mitan Galosa de Rabbi Abba. Rav Yosef says, look, I'm going to spit when I even think about the chicken of Rabbi Abba. V'od Amar Rav Gaza Zim Nechadi Ikle Lahasan. There was one time they went to Avdi Kutach de Bavlai. And they prepared for me this Kutach Bavlai. Kutach Bavlai, by the way, which comes up time and again throughout the Gemara. It was a dip made up of breadcrumbs and honey and cheese in the Tkufa of the Amoraim, specifically the Amoraim of Bavel, and Sheila Mine Kol Kobriche Marava. It basically caused sickness for all the caused all the sick people in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, again, just that general animus between the foods of Bavel to those living in Eretz Yisrael and vice versa. Okay. And why the Gemara presents it, I'm not really sure. The readers over here, gain by knowing about this kind of animus, but we're continuing now in the Gemara. Okay, Kali Abishal. So Kali Abishal says the Mishnah, so if it's something soft and delicate, the Mishnah gave two examples. So you're not allowed to even pour Kli Rishon onto these foods. So, and if you did, asks the Gemara, what would be the consequence? So Amar Rav Yosef Hidiachayv Chatas. So Rav Yosef says that would be Nisa Deraisa. Amar Marbrid Ravina Afa Nami Tanina. We learned the same thing as well. Chutz Mi Maliach Yashem Bekol Yisayis Manish Ardachtan Zuhi Gemar Malachtan. Meaning, since this finishes off the food, this is the final cooking process of the food. So therefore, this is a full act of cooking, even though for a quote-unquote standard food, for a tough food, this would not be the act of cooking. But nevertheless, for these delicate foods, since this is the final stage of preparation for these foods, so therefore, this constitutes a full-blown malacha of bishul. The Gemara describes it as the Gemar malacha, shmamina. So the Gemara says, fine. So when it comes to Kalei HaBishul, if one were to cook Kalei HaBishul, when I say cook, I mean even through Iri Kli Rishon, so then the Gemara's conclusion is that that is an Isser D'Araisa. Okay, and from here now, until the remainder of today's daf, and we're going to go just a little bit longer today just to finish up the daf, so from here until the remainder of the daf, the Gemara is going to go through a little bit of Agarata. So we get to close on today's daf with some Divrei Agarata. Yasu Rav Chia Bar Abba, Rav Asi Kamei de Rav Yochanan, we have these Amorayim of Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Asi sitting in front of Rav Yochanan. Yosef Rav Yochanan become a namnin. Now Rav Yochanan happens to be listening right now with only one ear. Right, he's taking not a nap, but he's somewhat subdued at this point in time. Amalei Rabbi Chia bar Abba Rabbi Asi. So a conversation occurs in front of Rav Yochanan. Now if you've been through enough Gemara, you know what's going to happen. What's going to happen is that these Amoraim are having a discussion in front of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan listening with a half ear, but when he hears the conversation and he hears the back and forth and he hears some of the quality of the answers that are given to the questions, eventually Rav Yochanan is going to wake up and Rav Yochanan is going to correct everybody in terms of their understanding. Four questions are going to be discussed. So, number one, Mipnei ma'ofo shebebavel shmeinim, why is it that the birds in Babel are so fat or so plump? Amar leklach lemidbar, azav erech shemani mehem. So the response is, no, everything is relative. If I took you out to the desert of Aza, I'm going to show you even fatter birds. Question number two: Mivnei ma mo'adim shebabavel smeichem mivnei shan sheinaniim. You know, in Bavel, so Yontif is really, really joyous. So why should that be? And the answer is because they're so poor. So that means to say that the contrast between Yontif and a regular weekday for them is so great. So that's why it's so happy for them. Number three: Mivnei ma tamid chacham shebabavel mitzuyanim. Why in Bavel are Tamid Chacham so dressed up? Lefisha Einam B'nei Torah. A really strong answer, a sharp answer. He says, well, they're not really B'nei Torah, and so therefore they have to distinguish themselves. They can't distinguish themselves with their scholarship. They're not such Tamid Chachamim, so therefore they dress very well. I understand. That's a really strong answer. And Mimnei Ma, the fourth question, Mimnei Ma of Dikochav Mizuamos. Why is it that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah are Mizu Amos are repugnant? So not the best translation, but right now it'll work. Mimisha Ochlim Shkatzim Veramusim, because of their diet, they eat non-kosher food, and so as a result of that, so they are Mizu Amos. So good. So these are the four questions that are asked. These are the four answers that are given, all in front of Rav Yochanan, and this is going to wake Rav Yochanan up. Meaning the answers that are given, the poor quality of answer that's given, Rav Yochanan now is basically has been arisen. Ita Irbahu Rav Yochanan. He wakes up, Amrlu Dardiki, and he says to them, Dardiki. Now that is a term to describe young Tamid Chachamim, but it is not the most complimentary term. It's basically a term that describes youth and immaturity. And he says, Dardiki, lo kach amarti lechem, I told you, amor lechachma achotiat, according to the Pasuk in Mishlei. Im bar lecha adavar ka achoska shiasur lach omrehu, v'im lav lo tamru. Now if you know something clear, let's say for example, the halacha that one is not allowed to be with his sister. That's one of the arayas. So, which is a halacha that is very clear, written in the Torah, two times, both in Achrimos and in Kedoshim. So good. So if you know the halacha very clear, great. And if not, so then don't say anything. And so what he's pleading with the young Talmid Chachamim is, look, right, you don't know these answers that you're giving. You don't know these answers. And they're not good answers. And don't say anything unless you know something clearly. So, Amr Lei V'Lei Malan Mar, Eizem Mehem. So they asked Rav Yochanan, okay, we accept the Musar. So could you please help us, enlighten us on these issues? And so now we're going to go over all four questions again, and we're going to give the answers of Rav Yochanan. So number one, why are the birds in Bavel so fat? Because they never experienced galus. And when something, when a person, or now we're going to add also an animal, experiences galus, so that creates a certain amount of dietary need, meaning you're going to get emaciated. You're just not going to be as strong and as vigorous as the person who is basically in their home court. Okay, the analogy, right, being in your home court versus being away. Shanam of the pasuk says Shanan Moav Minurav B'Shaket Hu Al Shamarav Uvegololo Halach. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, and that means to say that basically for the exile that is experienced from the Chorban Beis Hamikdash Rishon. So, and obviously today being an unbelievably appropriate day to discuss this, unfortunately. So for Chorban Beis Rishon, so everything was sent into exile. The Hachaminan de Galu. The Gemara quotes the Brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Nun Beishana Lo Avra Ish BeYehuda. Now, for 52 years, there was a full exile outside of Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, Ala Rima Sebechi V'Nehi, Miofa Shemayim Ba'ad Behema, Nadadu Halachu. Everything was exiled out of Eretz Yisrael for 52 years. Now, how do we get to the number 52? So, it's interesting. The Gemara is going to give a Gematria, Behema, which is one of the words in the Pasuk, Begematria Chamshim Betartin Havu. So, the word Behema is 52, so that's a Gematria. Rashi says, by the way, that the gematria is good, but the truth of the matter is that 52 years works out historically. Meaning, we know this based on Psukim, says Rashi, and based on Gemaras. We know that the exile between the first and second base of Mikdash is a total of 70 years. But in terms of a full exile, where everything was taken out of Eretz Yisrael, that was 52 years. Because 18 years prior to the construction of the second base of Mikdash was actually the beginning of the construction of the second base of Mikdash. Second base of Mikdash was first allowed by Koresh, but then it was stopped, and this occurred 18 years before the actual building of the second base of Mikdash, and this was 52 years after the Gullus of Tzidkiyahu. So there were a total of 52 years where there was a full Gullus. And so, for these 52 years, there was a full Gullus, so that means to say that the birds and all the animals in Eretz Yisrael experienced Gullus, and therefore were slightly more emaciated than the birds of Bavel, which never experienced Gullus. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kulan Chazer, Chutz Mikulis HaHispanis. And everybody returned back to Eretz Yisrael with the exception of Kulis HaHispanis. Da Amar Rav, Hanimade de Debaval, Mehadre Maya Le'in Etam, V'Hai Kevin Gloshari Shadre Lo Matzi Salik. And the Gemara here gives a natural explanation in terms of why it is the Kulis HaHispanis did not return back to Eretz Yisrael, because in order to go back to Eretz Yisrael, you have to swim upstream. I'm giving a very brief description of the Gemara over here. Rashi actually goes through more detail, but just a very brief description. You have to swim upstream. The Kol Yisrael Hispanis do not have the strong enough body to, these mackerels don't have a strong enough body in order to swim back upstream, back into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore did not return back to Eretz Yisrael. And okay. And by the way, right, this one line over here explains why it is that this Agadita comes up over here, because this Agadita seems to have nothing to do with our Gemara. There doesn't seem to be any connection whatsoever. But our Mishnah mentioned as one of the Kalei Abishah, the Kol Yisrael Hispanis. And so over here in this back and forth, so the Gemara brings up incidentally these type of fish. And so perhaps this is the reason why the Agadita is brought into our discussion over here. We have three more questions to go through. And Rav Yochanan's answer. Why are the Yontovs in Bavel so joyous? Because they were not part of the Klal Dichsiv, the Pasuk says, so in the Navi Hosea, he describes the kind of Simcha that is going to be stopped in Eretz Yisrael. There's not going to be Chodesh, and there's not going to be Shabbos, and there's not going to be Moed, Uksiv. And in Chazon Yishayahu, which we just learned, there's a Haftarah, Chadshechem Oadechem, Sananafshi Hayu Alai Latorach. So the Rosh Chodesh and the Moadim, Sananafshi, I despise them. And they were a Torach. And what does that mean, they were a Torach? They were a burden. My Hayu Alai Latorach, Amar Velazar, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Dain Yisrael Shechut In Lifanai. It's not enough that the Jewish people are sitting in front of me. Ella Should matrichin osi leida is gzera kasha, but they also want to know what kind of gzera they're going to have. Avi alehem that I'm going to bring upon them. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak ein lachal kol regel regel shlo bata bolash lo tzipor va Amar Rabbi Chanina ein lachal kol regel veregel shlo ba letzveria agmon v'kamton uvazmura and the kind of suffering that occurred in Eretz Yisrael every yontif. So there would be some sort of Roman troop that would go to Tzipori, and every yontif there would be another type of army invader that would go into Tveria, meaning Eretz Yisrael was fraught with attacks on Yontif and Rosh Chodesh. And so the Gemara says so they simply did not have the ability to be mesemech on Yontif in Eretz Yisrael like they had in Bavel. In Bavel they experienced much more tranquility. In Eretz Yisrael, less tranquility. Okay, and Rav Yochanan says that is the reason why Yontif and Bavel was had so much more simcha, simply because they did not have the klala that was given in Eretz Yisrael. And by the way, historically, you understand that, we all understand that Yeshayahu and Hoshea are giving the nevuah for Chorban Bayis Rishon. And what the Gemara is describing over here, in terms of the Roman invasion in the towns of Tzipor and Tveria, so that is 500-600 years later. Okay, but obviously the nevuah is on the general klala that's going to be on Yontif in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Okay, that is Rav Yochanan's answer to the second question. Third question. The Talmid Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael are so distinguished. Now, the answer that was provided by the young Talmid Chachamim was a very sharp, caustic answer. Over here, Rav Yochanan gives a different answer. And that is because they're not indigenous to Bavel. And Amar Inche, and this goes with an expression that people say, Bemasa Shamai, a person living in his hometown, so his name, his reputation is sufficient. However, below Masa, but when you are going away and people don't know who you are, so Tusfai, so the way you're dressed is the way people are going to view you. And obviously, right, I love to think that people are not so superficial, but at the same time, human nature. And people see you and people see the way you're dressed, and that's how you're going to be judged. So the Gemara says that's why in Bavel, the Talmid Chachamim in Bavel were not indigenous to Bavel. They weren't born in Bavel. They come from Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, at a certain point in time, you know, historically, generationally, they do become indigenous, but they are imported, and so therefore, that's why they dress so respectably, so fine in Bavel. And finally, first we're going to quote another pasuk from Yeshayahu. Habayim yashreish Yaakov yatzitzu ferech Yisrael. The pasuk in Yeshayahu, Tani Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef now explaining the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Eilu tamidei chachamim shebebavel shows in tzitzinu ferechim l'Torah. And this is a reference to Talmidei Chachamim who are basically causing blossoming and budding in of Torah in Bavel. Okay, and again, it speaks to this idea that the Talmidei Chachamim coming from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, so they actually are going to be promoting Limud Torah in Bavel. So again, certainly this is a dismantling of the answer that was given by the young Talmidei Chachamim. They're not Bnei Torah, they are Bnei Torah, and they're creating the yeshivas in Bavel. Just happens to be that they're not native to Bavel. That's why they dress so nicely. And finally, Mimnei Ma'ov de Kochavim Mizuamim. And why is it that the Ov de Kochavim are Mizuamim? So, Shalo Amdul Har Sinai. So it's because they weren't by Har Sinai. Shebisha'a, Shebanacha, Shalchava, Hito Bazuama. So when we're going all the way back to Maisa Bracious and the encounter between Chava and the Nachash, and the Gemara over here gives a very graphic description of the Nachash with Chava. So the Nachash not only solicited Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas, but also had Bia with her. And Rashi says it beferish, right? Kishenasan la'itza, Rashi on top of the Amud, Kishenasan la'itza lechol min ha'itz, ba'la dechziva Nachash yisiyan lashon nisuin. Okay, however we are to understand that. But the idea over here is that the Nachash was Baal Chava, and he put into her Zuhama. And again, there's no way that I could properly describe the English language, but it's obviously something negative, a negative force that went into her. So Yisrael Shamdul Arsinai Paska Zuamasam. So Yisrael, so when was this negative force removed? By Mamad Arsinai. Ovdi Kochav Shalamdul Arsinai Lo Paska Zuamasam. But this was only experienced by Klal Yisrael, but not by the other Umas Olam. So they had this Zuma that goes all the way back to Chava. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Acha Bered, the Rav Ravashi, Gerimai. Okay, good. But what about a Ger? So a ger, so he converts. So he wasn't by Mamad Har Sinai, nor was his answers by Mamad Har Sinai. So Amalei Afagav Diinu Lo Havei Mazlai Havei. So the Gemara says, yeah, they weren't there, but the mazel was there. Dichsiv Es Asher Yishno Po Imanu Almeid Hayom Lifnei Hashem Lakinav Es Asher Inenu Po. Pasuk says that those that were there by Har Sinai and those that were spiritually there. And so Gerim, they were there. Their mazel was by Har Sinai. Upligi the Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Now the idea that the Zuah must stop at Maimon Har Sinai. So the Gemara says this is a point of dispute. Rav Abba Bar Kahana does not agree. The Amar Rav Abba Bar Kahana Ash Losh Doros Lo Pasuk Zuah Ma. Me Abosenu Avram Holy Des Yishmal Yitzchak Holy Des Esav Yaakov Holy Yid Bei Shvatim Shelo Yemem Shem Dofi. And according to Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, the Zuah must stopped by already the Avos. And basically we're looking over here is some sort of refining period. So Avraham, so he had to get rid of some of his Zuma, so a good portion of it went over to Yishmael. But Yitzchak still had some. So Yitzchak had Yaakov and Esav, so Esav now took away the Zuma. Yaakov now was Zuma free. And now when Yaakov has the Shvatim, each one of them is totally spared from having any kind of Zuma. So this sheet over here says that the Zuma stopped already, through the filtration of the avos of the three avos. Okay, let us recap our daf. We started off our morning regarding schita. Squeezing food, squeezing from the grapes or from the olives directly onto the food is mutter on Shabbos. This is the principle of a mashka habala soch ochel has the status of being ochel. So this is where we started the daf. This was the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel. The Gemara tried to attack it based on a couple of Mishnayos, but each time we defended, and this is in fact the accepted position of the Gemara, this is a halacha. We suggested that this may be subject to a machlokas tanayim, based on a Mishnah Maestros, as we are now already on the top of Kuf Mem Hei in our review, and the Gemara says that, yeah, that could very well be, it's a machlokas tanayim, but there are two other ways to explain that machlokas tanayim in the Mishnah Maestros. The Gemara continued about squeezing out the brine from the fish. The Gemara reported in the name of Rav that one is allowed to squeeze on Shabbos the brine outside of the fish. The brine is not viewed the same way as juice inside of a fruit. And so therefore Rav gives full allowance to do so. The Gemara notes that some have it in the name of Shmuel, but the Gemara says, but I'm telling you that I have it as a Masorah going to Rav. This brought us to the discussion of squeezing out the juice from a pickled vegetable and a cooked vegetable. So pickled vegetables and cooked vegetables, is one allowed to squeeze the juice out of these fruit? So it was a debate between Rav, Shmuel, and Rav Yochanan. If I'm squeezing it for the vegetable itself, just simply to remove the excess liquid from the vegetable, so according to all three shitas, it would be okay. That would be mutter. If I'm squeezing it for the juice, in order to extract the juice, so here, a difference of opinion between Rav, Shmuel, Rav Yochanan. Rav being the most makel, Rav Yochanan being the most machmer, and Shmuel being somewhere in the middle. Gemara touched on the topic of Eid Mipi Eid. Certainly works by Eid Asisha. Does it also work by Bechor as well? Subject to controversy. The Gemara's conclusion is that it would in fact be acceptable. Eid Mipi Eid for the allowance of a kohen to eat is Bechor. The Chalos Devash, the honey that comes out of the honeycomb, Gemara brought in a Braisa. The Gemara wants to know, what is that Braisa teaching us over the Mishnah? The Gemara says the Braisa is illuminating. Then we talked on, we're already up to the Amud Beis, and we talked about Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. Ein Bishul Achar Bishul applies to food that was cooked before Shabbos. The principle is that it's not subject to the Malach of Bishul on Shabbos itself. However, for Kalei Bishul, for foods that are delicate and soft, even Irui Kli Rishon would be an act of Bishul, and as we learned in the Gemara, it would be an act of Bishul Midda Araisa. Gemara spent a little bit of time talking about foods that are unsettling from the B'nai Bavel to the B'nai Eretz Yisrael, and from the B'nai Eretz Yisrael to the B'nai Bavel. The Gemara then went on to Agadata for the remainder of today's daf. Four questions that were discussed. Fat birds of Bavel, the Simchas Yom Tov that was experienced in Bavel, the distinguished stress of Tamei Chachamim in Bavel, and the negative forces of the Ovdei Kochavim, and why it is that we don't have these negative forces. So the Talmidim Rav Yochanan bantered on these topics, offering answers. Rav Yochanan heard their answers. Rav Yochanan was not happy with their answers and told them, if you know the answers, great, and if you don't know the answers, please do not provide. And the Gemara then gave us the four responses of Rav Yochanan to these questions.